This is Mouth Media Network, covering the business of lifestyle.
This episode of Beauty is Your Business is powered by Sennheiser, the future of audio.
Hi, my name is Ju E Wong, and I'm the global CEO at Moroccan Oil. What I love about beauty is that we put smiles on people's faces because people will trade up, trade down, but never out.
Hear from this powerhouse queen who has experience in over 4 continents and 7 countries. With a tangible track record of propelling emerging brands to the next level while globalizing established brands in the U.S. From companies like PepsiCo, Murad, Envy Paracone, Zio Skin Health by Dr. Obagi, her successful turnaround at Elizabeth Arden, and her vision for what the future holds at Moroccan Oil. You'll hear her operational playbook, how to manage investors, and her unique and effective leadership style.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, a podcast covering the intersection of business and innovation in the beauty business.
I'm Karen Moon, and I'd love to introduce my co-host, Abby Wallach.
Great to be here.
And April Franzino.
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Julie. We're so excited to have you here. Just to kick it off, I think you've had such a storied experience in the beauty industry. Can you walk us through what you're doing today at Moroccan Oil, but also the story of like how you started your career and the moves you've made?
That is always such a great question because it really takes me back. I think, you know, for people who knows me know that I did not start in the beauty industry. I actually started as a commodities trader. So I was handling crude oil, soft commodities, and eventually ended up trading foreign exchange. And what made me change was that when I was at PepsiCo, I was doing the commute from Arizona to New York for 18 months. And it became so tiring that I told myself, you know, what can I do in Scottsdale, Arizona that could really be meaningful to extend on my experience and what I've learned through the years, even as a trader, because it's still a business. And that's where I joined the Dial Corporation, where they just acquired a brand called Freeman Cosmetics. So I was responsible for that. And then fast forward, you know, 15 years later, I've gone through several private equity-backed portfolio brands. And I really love the fact that I could help grow them and turn them around. And now finally, with all that experience, I'm at Moroccan Oil. And Moroccan Oil is, to all intents and purposes, not a turnaround. It is a growth brand. And because it is a growth brand, I'm able to really look at the green field for ourselves. Where can I take it without looking at transitioning, without thinking of reorganizing a business, but really about bringing opportunities to life for a business.
What were the differences between working, obviously, in a heavy finance background and then transitioning into the beauty business? What were the, I guess, the pluses and minuses, or what did you love about one versus the other?
Yeah, I think, you know, in a commodity trading, very data-driven and also very much about where your results are really determined by the end or close of a market, I think it puts a lot of perspective in your, you know, in your thinking, that you don't take yourself too seriously. You kind of know that, you know, you can be someone's best friend and your boss could have bought you coffee that morning. But if you don't bring home the bacon, you are chopped liver. So it is what it is. Whereas I think in beauty, we understand that there is a payout. There's a long term and a short term. And sometimes in life, especially in beauty, you cannot expect a salesperson or a marketing person to give you an instantaneous success, you know, because one more time, I hear somebody tell me, give me a campaign that will go viral. I mean, if that was so easy, all of us would be doing it. So I think, you know, just balancing the two, understanding that, you know, business is a business. So you bring all the discipline and all the structure of running a business, whether it's to beauty or to trading. But at the same time, the nuances in each is such that it's still a very human-driven business, especially in beauty, and you are talking to the consumer. So I think all that plus, it doesn't hurt that I'm older, hopefully wiser now. And I think that makes my life and my job a lot more enjoyable. And I feel like I can add value to my team.
So I thought one of the things I want to talk about, so I mean, if we look at kind of the portfolio of companies you've been in, and even most recently, like Moroccan oil, certainly, but also when you were president of Elizabeth Arden, you're coming into more traditional brands,
yes.
But you actually are more on the innovative end, speaking at a lot of conferences, trying new things in digital. So I'd say you're kind of on that forefront of making traditional brands think fresh and innovative, like an indie brand, and in turnaround situations, and like from Dr. Obagi to Murad to Paracone, like how has it been operating in those different environments and contexts, and what have you learned from that that you're taking to Mark and all today?
Now I know why Karen is the host. I mean, I would never ask such great questions. Well, I think primarily, if you think about it, in all those brands that are indie brands and brands that are truly very much on the emerging front, what they have is really a great idea. And sometimes a great idea in order to scale needs that business structure and the discipline. And I think that's where I come in. I would not say I'm the most innovative person, you know, in the room, but what I am is I'm a person that kind of say there must be a better way to do something. So I have always, even at Murad, when we were looking at brick and mortar and their spa location, I was the one who kind of say, look, guys, what we need to do is look at e-commerce. E-commerce in 2004 was emerging. I mean, people didn't even know what e-commerce meant. And so that is something that I feel like I'm always interested to know what is new and exciting, and then sort of see, can I commercialize it? And so everywhere I've been, I've always tried to bring it home closer so that we can actualize revenue. Because at the end of the day, a great idea or a good idea that cannot be executed and cannot be commercialized is not good to an emerging brand. Then going to a more established brand like Elizabeth Arden, where there's a lot of structure and probably a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of discipline by the time I got there, plus the position was created for me, that I wasn't filling someone's shoes. So I wasn't able to really have any kind of legacy or institutional knowledge. So on some level, it was excellent because then I could really reinvent the wheel, so to speak. But I had a very good team, and the team was very willing to look at the digital platform. And I had a CEO who basically kind of say, look, do what you need to do, get the board's blessing, and then just run with it. So in all honesty, of all my jobs, the Elizabeth Arden job in 20 months, I have done more than everything than most of my other jobs combined. And the reason why I said that was when we took Elizabeth Arden, which was, you know, a 105-year-old brand at that time, and people look at it, and generally when I ask a question, have you heard of Arden? Oh, my mother uses it. My grandmother uses it. And it was very disheartening because it was a very solid brand. And so we created a campaign around it called From the Desk of Liz Arden. And, you know, history speaks for itself. We won Best in Show in the Glossies. We created 90 million global views. We were the most watched video tracked by L2 in the month of May 2016. I mean, you cannot ask for better results that way for a brand that is older. But the reason why it did was the team was willing to embrace it. And I was able to give them, you know, the ability to dream. And I was the facilitator. So I can't do their job, but I can help them do their job bigger.
So Elizabeth Arden was ultimately acquired,
yes,
by
Revlon.
So what are your thoughts on that acquisition? Because that was a very big, exciting moment,
exactly,
to have that company acquired by a bigger,
yes,
entity.
And I think what is so exciting, you know, about the acquisition for Elizabeth Arden is that Elizabeth Arden had a lot of merits in its business, which was a department store distribution. It had fragrance, and it also had the Red Door Spa. Well, if you look at Revlon had the mass, they had the color processing with Colomer, and they were co-captains or captains, you know, in the big box stores. So I think the synergy between those two organizations, you know, was very relevant. And I think today they have already gone through some of the transition, you know, sort of pains. And I'm hoping that with this now, what you will see is a lot more of the synergies amplifying in the marketplace. And I came out of an influencer review, And as it is, on the mass side, Revlon is already making a dent in terms of awareness. So I think things are working and taking learnings from the Elizabeth Arden side on the digital, because mass brands generally are not very good on the digital front, and emerging and sort of like premium luxury heritage brands are generally a little bit more aware of that. I think the combination of talents in there can really amplify their success.
So my next question is, these major entities are now together. What do you think they should be thinking about in terms of working with the indie brands? And what do you see for the future of the indie brands connecting to these huge, huge organizations?
Yes, I think, you know, what L'Oreal has been doing is actually a really interesting direction. They have been incubating brands, and there is a brand called Seed, S-E-E-D, which they have been incubating. And when I met with a founder not too long ago at a CEW event, I was very impressed, because to all intents and purposes, had they not said that L'Oreal was incubating them, I would never have known. That packaging was truly, you know, very innovative. I mean, it is a recyclable packaging that at the end of use, you could plant that in the ground to really, you know, reduce your carbon footprint and returning back to the environment. I met with a founder, and when I talked to him, you know, he had no trappings of all the bureaucracy that you would think that, you know, a bigger company incubating him would be. I think that's the direction that emerging brands should take. Prove yourself as a concept, gather some revenue, have a strong point of view and a strong DNA. Then when you approach companies like a strategic, like a L'Oreal or a Lauder, when they are incubating you, then you've got something to stand on. What has happening that over the last, I think, 12 months or so, a lot of indie brands are getting themselves ready for sale, or they develop a brand really with the intention of selling. And I think any time when you do that, you lose a lot of substance. And I think strategics are beginning to realize that, you know, substance is more important than style, that they are not acquiring a company for a marketing story. They need to acquire a company for a technology and a purpose. And I think 2019 will be a very interesting year, because both private equity and strategics are not going to pay those silly prices and multiples anymore.
So interesting on that point, because even though Seed is incubated within L'Oreal, like Shane really embodies, like, I mean, as a founder, he like really embodies the brand. You would never think.
Right.
Like, he has a farm and all this stuff.
Exactly.
It's like so interesting.
I want to learn
totally
about it.
That's the story.
Yes. And yes. And Karen is absolutely right. I mean, it makes you realize that, you know, big and small can coexist and do much stronger than each one of them standing on their own.
Yes.
Because if you think about what Seed can do as an being incubated, you don't have to worry about the back office, right? You focus all of your, you reinvest back into the business, you know, and amplify all of
you
your
revenue.
You have
the security behind
and
you.
And that, I think, is so, yes, the security.
To do the art and the work that you need to do to build the brand.
Yes, and be really innovative and not be afraid, you know, to kind of showcase that.
So for all of these indie brands that are starting, you know, and that all do embody, you know, all these authentic things about their DNA, what advice do you have for them as they seek investors? Because you've worked with so many investors, you know, managed boards, like tell us a little bit more about that.
I think first of all, there are three levels where, you know, venture capital or private equity and strategic will be interested. That obviously is that startup, you know, where you get to something like your 5 million, your 3 to 5 million. That is where you start looking for what we call venture capital and private equity funds that are looking at smaller companies. But you need to then have really a strong base of distribution, and your distribution need not be too wide. What you want to do is go very deep in your distribution so that whoever invests in you at that point knows how to bring some sort of operating and distribution opportunities to that. Then you get brands that are from 5 to 10 million and then going and with the potential of going up to 30 million very quickly. That is where it's a sweet spot for private equity, 10 to 30, 30 to 50 million. That's a very sweet spot for virtually every private equity, you know, out there. And so what they are going to help you with is scaling your operational excellence. So they will bring in or parachute in operating teams to really help you improve, bring in an operating CEO if there's a founder-led brand, or if there's a sitting CEO that needs to kind of understand how to improve on their performance with their team. So that can be very, you know, challenging sometimes when a private equity walks in and you have an existing team, they're bringing in a new team. So the ability to help transition that will be very important to get them from that 30, 50 million to that 60, 100 million. Now, when you get closer to the 100 million, you are now going to attract the attention of the strategics because they now want to see how they can complement your distribution, your brand, and your DNA into their operating portfolio because they want to amplify and the ability to kind of have economies of scale kicks in, you know, for the back office, for the financial, for the HR, and allow you to really drive deeper into your distribution and international. So there are three stages to all that. And I think anyone who wants to think of building your brand as solid as you can and minimizing the headcount. So I've seen brands when they are about 10 million and they have 30 people. There's a rule of thumb that I apply that for every million revenue, you only should bring in one person. So if you want to be, you want to have 30 people, make sure you can have at least $30 million in revenue. If you can't get there, don't hire the people. Because obviously, if you're just starting out, you need four or five people. That's different. But once you get to your 10, 20, 30 million, exercise that discipline. It makes it so much easier when someone wants to come in and acquire you because they know your cost is, you know, optimized rather than over that you have overspent and they need to think of transitioning and reorganizing your team.
So thank you so much for sharing that. That's so interesting and super insightful for everyone who's growing a brand. What attracted you to the Moroccan Oil opportunity and what's your vision?
Great question again. I think what attracted me to Moroccan Oil after, I think 12, 13 years of turnaround, I really didn't want to walk into a company and somebody looks at me and say, here she goes again. You know, I really wanted to be able to walk into a company and say, look, all that I have learned, all that I've applied, can I just make this, you know, a bigger and better, you know, version of itself without making the changes that normally comes with turnaround? So that was the first thing. And the vision for Moroccan Oil, I think the sky's the limit for hair. I believe that skincare had its moment in the, you know, in the 80s, 90s with all the dermatologists. They became the rock star, you know, of the beauty industry. And they brought a lot of science and clinical support to the skincare place. Makeup had its makeup artist, you know, not too long ago. It's a social media phenomenon. It's still the most viewed Instagrammable moments for color. And with all of those makeup artists, I think has given the category a lot more hope. And in terms of creating new brands and bespoke brands, I think hair care is now time for its close up, so to speak. And the reason why I say that is that there's going to be more and more skincare technology that's going to be brought into hair care. And if you look at Asia, I mean, the future is now. You don't have to kind of say what's going to happen. Look at what is happening in Asia. Apply that in America, you have a business. And if you look at what's happening in Asia, they understand the scalp is really the canvas of the way skin is the canvas, you know, of our skincare. So I think that moving forward, what we would be doing in Moroccan Oil is to continue our tradition of oil-infused beauty, which is really when we started, it was about treatment. And we will try, you know, to do what we can to deliver on the performance, but without sacrificing on the aesthetics. Because our co-founder, Carmen Tell, you know, always remind us, you know, science without beauty will become a horror story.
Thank you. So let's move into snacks. What did you bring for us?
Yes. Okay. Should I move this? Can I move this? Yes. Okay. So I have always thought that, you know, every time when I'm at my, you know, at my office, I always wanted to snack. And I used to snack a lot on potato chips and everything. And as I got older, I realized that the pounds don't go away as fast. So I then started researching and I went back to my Perricone days because in Perricone, he always encouraged us to eat almonds, you know, and walnuts and, you know, all the nuts because it's rich in omegas, rich in, you know, protein. So that's why I brought you guys. It's gluten, it's everything that you could ever want it to be.
In a nut.
It's gluten-free, it's vegan, it's, you know, non-GMO and all that. So I hope that you'll like it. There's walnuts, there's pecans.
Oh.
And I also did bring some of my favorite tea. It's like one serving. And in case we don't have sweeteners, I brought honey as well. to go with it.
Thank you.
So if you want to, I can break this up and then we can pass it around. The only thing I've told the health shop that sells this is tell the provider to use better packaging. maybe sustainable.
Is that
packaging.
How you go through the world when you buy something? You're always thinking.
Yeah. Well,
you're always thinking how to improve.
Can you not recycle that? No, right?
No, I don't think so. Well, the design
it's got all the emblems, but not recycling.
In the industry, do you look at packaging in a different way for every product?
Yeah,
I think that's the marketing.
I guess you know that's the hazard of the occupation. But I also try very hard not to do this.
Pass
by
on to Karen.
Working on the floor. So when I work on the floor, I find that I let my, you know, sales team tell me and show me what they're doing. And then I try to do the same thing, you know, as they do. So that instead of me trying to be critical, I am trying to learn. Because sometimes when you're always looking for flaws or looking for ways to improve, you really don't learn. Because you're so occupied in looking, in finding ills, that and learning is actually very fun because I find that every time I learn something, my ability to be a better manager is very apparent because I enjoy doing it. Even when I'm trying to share with somebody what I consider a constructive criticism, it doesn't come across like a criticism. It's because I now can say that I've learned it, right? And now I'm trying to share this with you. So it makes performance review that much more easy, you know, rather than, you know,
so you're inspiring them as opposed to
hope so. I mean, you always hope that you do that, right? And that's why the 360 reviews are so good. And I think the only time I when this happened and I asked myself, have I done the right thing, was when I left Arden and they gave me this little poem and they framed it. And when I read it, I'm like telling myself, I told them, this is exactly what I hope I have done. The fact that you actually put it in words makes it so worthwhile. So I think those are the times. It's, you know, people talk about this all the time. It's not what you say, it's how you make them feel and how you make them know, realize that they are much better than, you know, what some people may make them think. And there are instances where not everybody is cut out to do, you know, what they think they want to do. And it's those are the hardest conversations, but it doesn't mean that those conversations should not be had. I mean, how many times have we been in business and when we let someone go and somebody said, wow, we thought that this could have happened sooner. What took you so long? I'm like, why didn't you tell me? You know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
It's nice when you have many years to look back and see and learn from and use your experiences to share, especially with that younger generation.
Yep. And I always tell myself, I tell people, you know, the advice to my younger self is, don't fear getting older because you will get wiser. Even if you don't think you are because
you have to be.
Yeah, your experience and your perspective. I mean, look,
just living.
I mean, yes. And when you have a family and you have children and you have cousins or you have nieces and nephews, it's a whole different world. You know, you don't take yourself so seriously anymore.
Are you ready? Here comes Makeup in Los Angeles, the only and unique B2B makeup event at your doorstep. Makeup in Los Angeles is a unique place where you can find everything from alpha to omega, every piece of a makeup and skincare product, and make your own line. All advised and guided by the savoir-faire of the most qualified experts in the beauty industry. Whatever your project is, you'll find it at Makeup and make the best contacts. You can ask for an invitation on the show's website, makeup-in-losangeles.com.
Jue, you mentioned a little bit before about how one of your strong suits is looking at ways to bring about bigger ideas to companies that are existing and sort of facilitate that process among the teams that you're working with. Can you give us examples of any situation similar to that in your current role at Moroccan Oil?
Yes. I think at Moroccan Oil, if I look at the brand, you know, what is its number one strength? There are three areas that they are very strong in. First of all, they were obviously the leaders in the hair oil. They brought Moroccan oil, really, or argan oil into the space where it became a staple. So that's the one thing. They have that authority. The second thing about them was they really broke ranks with the beauty industry, especially in hair, where they introduced Moroccan oil treatment in a glass bottle. And it was very deliberate because they really wanted it to be recyclable, and glass was definitely the most recyclable at that time. And then if you look at the way they did it, was the colors were very different. Everything in up until then was very pastel, very white, mono colors, and they came up with a strong turquoise laced with orange. And then the third thing about them was they hired a lot of people in the organization in the beginning that were not from the beauty industry. So the thinking was very refreshing. They had people from IT, they had people from technology, they had people from, we even had somebody that was from NASA, you know. Truly, the company could brag that we had a rocket scientist. So how many companies can say that, right? So because of that non-traditional approach, what I find that I now come in, even though I come from a background of a more sort of structured and disciplined, and on some level, you know, where, you know, a little bit more bureaucratic, because I can't look at timelines and projects and goals and objectives that needs to be met. But it's very liberating when you have a team of people who come together and kind of say, I really want the direction, but at the same time, I am very interested in X, Y, and Z. So what I try to do is I really try to think of myself as a conductor or as a coach. My job is not to kind of say, no, I don't think you're doing this right. Let's try it this way. My job is to kind of run the idea from concept all the way through and see what they are thinking and let the other team members hear about it. So one of the things I implemented is I've seen pockets of brilliance, but the team never really got together and sat down, you know, on a regular basis. So now my direct reports, there are about 9 of them. 2 of them are in Montreal. They come together on a weekly basis where we sit around as a team 1 hour. Each one only has 5 minutes to 10 minutes. We go over first the operation, meaning that where's our shipment? So this is the bureaucracy comes in. I want to know where we are in terms of month to date, quarter to date, year to date. How much more shipments are we making? Are we to budget or off budget against last year? And what, how are we tracking? Then we go on to the sales team, the digital team, the PR team, the marketing team to go over what are some of the key initiatives they are working on and where are they and what do they need me to facilitate. We finish that 1 hour. Everybody hears what everyone is doing. They've got their working meetings. Then they have a one-on-one with me, half an hour, no more, no less. And during that half an hour, I don't do any of the talking. They talk, they tell me what they want, and they tell me what I need to do for them. It's not what I want them to do for me, because that's not how it works. So let's say there's a roadblock or bottleneck with our production somewhere or with a distributor. I will make that happen. I will pick up the phone, call the distributor, negotiate with them, or call a supplier and have that conversation. Because usually by now, I know a lot of the players and I work with them. So whether it's a retailer, whether it's a distributor, whether it's a raw material supplier or a vendor, you know, I can get that done. And I think by doing this, and putting, you know, the money where my mouth is, so to speak, they know that I'm not just going to ask them to do something that I know it cannot be done or is tough to do. So I think just operating within the culture, but also amplifying that cultural good and then allowing it to really grow and expand, I think makes us, you know, stronger. And even now when I'm hiring people, I don't necessarily think of just the beauty space. I actually can think outside because I've seen success coming from that non-beauty world. So that's what excites me.
So most. You're basically Oz. That's who I'm thinking about.
Well, that's nice to say. Yes, maybe.
Well,
yes.
No, you're the leader. So you help manage everything through what needs to get done in order to have success.
But I also think that I'm fortunate because I have 2 co-founders who have really given me, you know, a lot of latitude, and they are the ones. I mean, if anything, if you think about it, they built the foundation, right? What is harder to build, the foundation or the building? The foundation. I'm now building the building. And so I look like, you know, the hero because I'm the beneficiary. The skyscraper is coming up. But they spend years just making sure the piling was strong so that when we built that building, that nothing is going to rock it.
So what is the next plan and where do you see the brand headed now that they've brought you in to help them
Yes.
Build the building higher.
Yes. What we want to do is our heritage is always going to be in the professional distribution. So the hair salons, you know, those people who have really brought us, you know, to where we are today. So we want to anchor ourselves what we call in the back bar. 70% of the business in hair salon is in services, and particularly in color services. So we are unlikely going to go into the color processing anytime soon because that takes a lot of technical knowledge. But what we can do is that we can help with a lot of the treatment needs of women. Women who color their hair obviously have damaged hair, and sometimes the hair is more porous. So having a good treatment at a salon, you know, nourishing the hair, that's very important. So we want to anchor ourselves there. And in fact, last year we launched what we call our Color Complete Collection, which was basically just that. We have two products in the back bar that really helps with calming the scalp before the color process gets brought on. And then after the color is processed and the shampooing with the product that we have that retains the vibrancy of the color, and then you put a pose, which is a very nourishing conditioner that really acts as a shield for each strand of your hair. So think of when you wear sunscreen, it's a shield for your skin. Now you're wearing something to protect the color. So by doing that for the hairstylist and the hair colorist in the back bar, we make their life easier. And when we make their life easier, their customers are happier. And when their customers are happier, they're going to come back more often to the hair salon. So this is about giving them an opportunity to double up on their business, you know, both in services as well as in the opportunity to look at where they can take themselves, you know, outside of just more and more of the same, right? Doing something that is treatment focus rather than just coloring focus, or they can combine the two. That is where we are going to go. And then on the retail piece, we want to help them understand how to retail. Like anything, estheticians, hairstylists, nurses, you know, what I've encountered in the beauty space, the more professional an individual is, the less comfortable they are in selling a product or retailing a product to a customer. I mean, all of us have sat in a hair salon chair. We tell them our most intimate of secrets, things that sometimes we don't even tell our friends. They are our psychiatrists. They tell us everything about their families too. But at the end of the day, nobody ever talks about products. They never come and say, look, I use this on your hair. Would you like to use this? No, even when I prompt them and say, what did you just use on my hair? Oh, just this. I think they pride themselves as somebody that, look, I'm not here to sell. I'm here to provide a service. But we always want to try to help them understand. Think of when a baby is just born in a hospital. Do you think the doctor would tell the mother, just take this baby without any clothing on and just walk out of the hospital? You won't do that. Same thing with your hair and same thing with your skin. After a facial, after a hair color, you are like a fresh baby. Why would you send your client out of the door without any protection? So we are helping, we are hoping that through conversations, through show and tell, that they will get a lot more engaged in understanding that their service extend not only in the service they actually provide, but the service in the retail that they will ask them to consider.
Great analogy. Oh, and I love all the stuff you're talking. We actually had someone on the show about last year around scalp. It was a hairstylist, Fabio, but he just enlightened us about how important the scalp is. And it's so interesting. So, I mean, there's so much of an education process right now, right?
Yep.
But in Asia, it's just a different market.
Yes, in Asia, it's a different market. I think because if you look at a lot of Asians, when they do color their hair, it's really to cover gray. And then the very much younger generation, they bleach their hair to have fun colors. But ultimately, everyone will still go back to that rich mahogany, that burgundy, you know, that really rich, you know, cocoa kind of color, or dark or black. So because of that, they know that if you are, especially if you're covering gray, it's very close to your scalp. And the inflammation is there. It's just like, if you think about it, if you keep putting chemicals on your scalp, at some point, even it will be sensitive to touch. That's why it's important to calm it, you know, and just like skin inflammation is the cause of a lot of skin problem, scalp inflammation is a lot of cause to scalp issues, from hair loss to thinning hair, you know, to kind of like, you know, hair that is not shiny or vibrant anymore. I mean, you look at a young, you know, a 10-year-old or a 5-year-old kid up until about 13 years old, they can do whatever they want and their hair is bright and vibrant and just beautiful. And that's because they don't chemical treat it. There's no chemical treatment on their hair. things change as they you know, try to do other things to it. But technology and science can really make a difference. And that is what we want to do at Moroccan Oil. But at the end of the day, to Karen's point, education is very important. And so we have an academy now that is relatively small. It sits about 10 people. We will be having a new academy at the end of this year that will sit up to 30 people. And so we are hoping to really bring education, you know, to the forefront, not only on our own products, but also on styling, on cutting, on treatments, so that whoever comes to the classes is assured of having a full breadth of knowledge.
Are you leveraging influencers or digital? How are you using that to tell the story around scalp and, you know, the newness and actually the need? And actually, it's so interesting because to your point, I think hair loss is one of the most exciting categories for women. There's so many people impacted by it. I can't remember. We did a whole report on it, actually, but it's just not talked about.
Yes.
And I think there's opportunity now. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And so, you know, what we want to do is, especially on the social media front and the digital piece, it's really showing a lot of before and afters. And obviously, while we are validating a lot of our claims through clinical studies, you know, bringing skincare sensibilities into the hair care world, we also know that hair is a very visual kind of, you know, moment for women. So in terms of before and afters is very important. Unretouch is very important because nobody wants to see a Photoshop after, because what's the point? So those are the things that we are going after. And the influencers that we are partnering with, we're actually going after nano and micro influencers because we really don't feel like the pay to play is going to resonate with the end consumers anymore. And in fact, the grassroots working is back to the tried and true word of mouth, right? If you think about what has happened before social media was social media, we all turned to our friends and family and we asked them for advice and information. We are curating a group of people that truly are Moroccan Oil advocates, and we are trying to get them, you know, to kind of be that community and spread the word. And they will be our beta testing in terms of if we have new products to try and new reviews that, you know, we would like to bounce off them. And I think creating that will make it more meaningful, you know, for the end consumer who are listening. So we are hoping to kind of like get that going. It's a lot harder work because you don't have an agency to go to and hire a bunch of people. But I think ultimately that's how Moroccan Oil started. I mean, when the brand first came out, there was no social media in 2008 in the way that we know it. And yet in less than 2 years, when we watched a chart on how Moroccan Oil as a word became a lot more used, it just went off the chart, and that was through word of mouth.
What about the celebrity expert? Because, you know, there's a lot of talk about the influencer and the hair and cosmetics, but what about the expert, the people who are working on the consumer day in and day out, whether they're a stylist or a colorist, and the celebrity experts who've, you know, colored the...
We do work with them. And, you know, what we do is, unfortunately, if you think about it, makeup artists, they're rock star makeup artists. You know, the Bobby Browns of the world and the Kevin, you know, O'Quan, you know, when he was still alive, you know. And unfortunately, in hair, there's really no one that is a household name. So we are giving, you know, people like that a platform. So we work with Bryce Scarlett. We have our own ambassador, Kevin Hughes, you know, Antonio in Spain. They are not household names, but they are household names in their own right within their own community. So what we want to do is give the opportunity, not only through our academy and through our brand, for them to do Fashion Week with us. So they partner with us in Fashion Week. They do, we are with the Golden Globes and the Oscars. So we have them come in and do hairs, and we will help Instagram things for them. While they have their followers, we also have ours. So together we sort of like double up.
So it's like
our
a collaboration.
Yeah. And we feel like by doing this, it's harder work, right? I mean, instead of just signing them up and then let them do what they want. But we have to be authentic. I think people talk about authenticity in many ways. And Moroccan Oil has always known it to be that let's work from the grassroots up.
Love that.
Yes.
So as we know, hair care and styling is a super crowded category, and it's very confusing for consumers. Their packaging has all kinds of different terms on it. Which one do I pick for my hair today? And, you know, tomorrow it could be different. And so What are you guys doing at Moroccan Oil to sort of help the consumer find the right products for her?
Right. And so this is where Carmen Tell, who is our co-founder, has always been very, very focused on. And therefore, if you look at our packaging, we have very little copy on our packaging. We really sort of say shampoo, hydration, shampoo, volume. So we really go after what it's supposed to do and go from there. And we will continue to do so because we don't believe that every spot and empty space on a packaging has to be filled, because by that time, you know, nobody reads anything. But and I think that when we say it's for volume, it will take care of volume. We won't try to say, oh, it's going to also be, you know, everything else. Because I think a woman understands that I have a primary concern. And then the secondary concerns are, and usually like table stakes, a shampoo should clean, a shampoo should not strip, you know, a treatment should do what it's supposed to do. So all those fundamentals, basics, we'll make sure it's there. But when it's a key benefit, we will highlight it on the packaging.
So next up, in the same way that you get to know your hairstylist in a personal way, we'd love to get to know you better as we hit the fan.
Hi, it's Mark Rico. I want you to listen to this. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. It's a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. And that place is ZipRecruiter.com/mouthmedianetwork. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy. And you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/mouthmedianetwork. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/mouthmedianetwork. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And now it's hitting the pan.
So let's get personal. It's time to hit the pan, as we like to do with all of our favorite beauty products. So I'm going to spin the salon chair to see who gets to go first. And what's so exciting about this is actually the salon chair reference really makes sense. So,
yes. Yes.
Oh, it does. Yes.
Yes.
That was funny.
Totally does.
April.
Okay. So obviously, you've traveled around to many different companies in your career. Where are you from? Where were you born? And what's your favorite place that you've lived?
Okay, I like to say, you know, now with this Crazy Rich Asian movie that's doing so well, I am born in Singapore. I'm crazy. I'm Asian, but I'm not rich. So that's how I'll put it. And my favorite place, I have to say, is Hong Kong. And the reason why I say Hong Kong is that if anyone who's been there, you will notice that the spirit of the people there is such that when Mandarin was going to become a big deal, they knew that 1997 was coming, the British was going to, you know, leave and the Chinese was going to take over. They all started learning Mandarin. And within a couple of years, they were very fluent. But up until then, they couldn't really speak Mandarin really well. So they're very resilient. They're very adaptive. And one of the things I've seen that is best to define Hong Kong and why I love that country so much is that when a bus driver gets passed by a Mercedes driver, he doesn't say, you know, he doesn't curse at them, but instead say when and not if. When I become rich, I'll do exactly the same thing that you just did to me. And I like that attitude, is that, you know, come, you know, they will be able to achieve what they want. And I feel like when I was in Hong Kong, when I lived there, you know, the sky was the limit. And I like that feeling of freedom and the ability to do anything and whenever, whatever you want to.
Sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. You're spinning?
My spinning chair is spinning. Abby.
So you've had a phenomenal career and you've shared a lot of your experiences, and it sounds like what you're doing next or now with Moroccan Oil is very exhilarating and exciting for you. What do you do for fun?
Okay, what I do for fun is actually very boring, I think. I love to watch junk television that is in the background. So if Bravo TV and HGTV are my two favorite channels, and it's actually set there. When I turn on my TV, it hits HGTV. So the reason why I like that is that I don't have to think, and I really, you know, don't have to even follow. Because if I miss one episode, it's not the end of the world. Not like if I did not watch, you know, Handmaid's Tale, I have to like go back three episodes to kind of follow through. But with this, you know, I kind of know, yeah, what's happening. And I like sort of sitting, you know, on my couch, having that in the background and just reading something. So I feel like I've achieved a lot. I've kind of like watched some very relevant day-to-day life stuff so that I can have the conversation with my team, if you know, to be light. And then at the same time, I'm reading a book and then I'm resting, because, you know, if you are resting, if somebody sort of asks me why, it helps you with your skin and also helps you, you know, with your mental attitude. And if you notice that if you have a very aggravated conversation, your skin actually doesn't look as good. But if you are calm, your skin looks really good. So that's what I want to do. I want to calm myself down and not have to think or do anything.
What are you reading now?
I love to read biographies. So I love to so I just reread Steve Jobs, you know, biography. And I love a lot of corporate books. So I've just read The Everything Store again. And I tend to reread things a lot because I highlight it on my Kindle and I go back to those notes. And the reason why I like to do that is I feel like when I read it first, I may have identified with something, and then I read it again and I'm identifying with something else. And I enjoy that. And one of the fun books I've read is actually Crazy Rich Asian before it became a movie. And so I kind of like that too. Yeah.
So this chair is spinning. It didn't land on me, but I'm going to take it anyways because I'm the last person. you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, you're a part of so many organizations for the beauty industry. You have a holistic view because you've worked in so many facets and different types of brands. What is the work that CEW is doing and PBA? And, you know, what do you think these organizations, how are they supporting the industry and what can they do to take it further?
Right. I think we are very fortunate today that we have associations and organizations like this that really represents the greater good and the greater interests of the community. Because, you know, 65 years before CEW, there was nothing. So imagine, you know, women in the beauty business that really had to fend for themselves in a place where there's just a lot of glass ceilings.
And then, really relevant with their 65th anniversary, right?
Yes. So, and then PBA, you know, if you think about it, is the Professional Beauty Association, and it represents a lot of hair salons. And as we know, hair salons don't have a lot of structure in terms of reporting and in terms of, you know, ringing up their sales. So for PBA to kind of be there to be the sanity check, pulse check for the industry is very important. And it gives businesses like ourselves an opportunity to lean in, to look at and say, you know, what information I may need and what can I do as a brand or as a manufacturer to really bring about the greater good. So PBA is also a nonprofit. They also have an arm that really takes care of people in need. And so recently when we had the hurricane situation, there were a lot of 100% of net proceeds of donation that we donated to PBA went to the cause rather than administrative, you know, that is deducted. So I think as executives, as we mature in the industry and where we have opportunities to serve and to give back, you know, those are very rewarding. And, you know, I always tell myself, I don't want to sit on a board where I just occupy a board seat. I really want to be an advocate and an activist on some level. And, you know, the day that I cannot do that is the day where, you know, I should then, you know, step back and let someone else who can sit in that shoes.
And watch more Bravo.
And watch more Bravo. Yes, that's a good one. And I'll have a Bravo party one day.
Can we come?
Yes, absolutely. In our pajamas.
Yeah,
perfect.
So well, thank you so much for sharing all of your insights, sage advice, and so interesting to hear about the next what's next for Moroccan Oil is super exciting.
Thank you.
Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Just one thing. I think, you know, people always ask me, you know, should I do this? Should I not do this? You know, I'm just so afraid that I'll be regretful. And I'd just like to sort of share this quote that I always use. You know, regrets are never about failures, but regrets are about things that you wanted to do and never did.
Love it.
So true.
Jue, what is the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
Well, through social media on Instagram. My social handle is @JueWong888 and my LinkedIn profile, which is my name.
Thank you. So thank you for joining us for another episode of Beauty is Your Business. And I wanted to also thank my co-host, Abby Wallach.
Thank you.
And April from Zeno.
Thank you.
And this is Karen Moon, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Hugs and kisses.
This has been Beauty is Your Business. To suggest guests or content for the show or to become a sponsor, email us at podcast@beautyisyourbusiness.com. Keep up with the show on social media at Beauty Biz Show. That's Beauty, B-I-Z, Show. Episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, along with our website, beautyisyourbusiness.com. Produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2017, all rights reserved. No portion of the episode may be distributed or published without the express written permission of the producers. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network, covering the business of lifestyle.